Welcome to the Pitt Rivers Museum's Matters of Policy podcast. This is a podcast in which we explore the museum's collections development policy, speaking with guests from across the globe to delve into the language used and consider what really matters in this policy.
Hi, I'm Alexis.
Hi, I'm Megan. And since I'm on Indigenous land today, I'd like to do a land acknowledgement. So I am a white settler of Celtic and British descent living on Treaty 1 territory in Winnipeg, which is the traditional lands of the Anishinaabe, the Innu Ojibwe, the Innu Cree, Oji-Cree, Dene, and Dakota peoples, as well as the birthplace of the Métis Nation. I acknowledge that Canada's history of colonialism and genocide continue to deeply harm Indigenous communities, and I am committed to listening to Indigenous people throughout my work in cultural institutions and learning as much as I can in order to move forward with truth, reconciliation, and restitution.
And today we'll be interviewing Solomon Enos.
Solomon Enos is an Indigenous artist from Hawaii who works in a variety of mediums, including contemporary pieces. He has worked extensively with the Pitt Rivers Museum and is here today to talk about his experience working with the Pitt Rivers Museum as an artist and to share his perspectives on the practices and policies of the Pitt Rivers Museum. Okay, first question. Can you tell us just a bit about your experience working with the Pitt Rivers?
Sure, absolutely. It was a call I got, by Marinka. She had reached out to me with her interest of creating an intervention piece in the museum. I was absolutely honored. I must say, I have to front load. I'm a real big fan of everything British. my grandmother is from England, and so I've had a chance to visit England several times. And I'm listening to the BBC radio all day long. I even spend time listening to the BBC Radio 4, and I love to hear the shipping report. Little things like that. So I'm a real big fan of everything British. And so in Hawaii, our royalty really had a strong connection with British culture, because at the time we were between America and England, as far as our, when it came to our kingdom. But anyway, rolling it forward, it's really wonderful to continue to collaborate, and to work with you folks. And especially because the level of sensitivity and the layer of storytelling that is being achieved for the museum is setting such an important standard for how stories get told about the artifacts. It's a real, real careful line, and I'm sure it's happening with so many other folks. I'm really interested in what's been going on with the, I believe is like the Benin, the collections of materials that have come from Africa, and that real big discussion about whether those things get returned or whether they put on display. And it's such a dual-sided thing, because on one hand, artifacts, should go home to where they're from. But at the same time, this opportunity to understand, not only through stories are important, but the actual artifacts, actually being able to look at something and to see a feathered cloak from Hawaii or something like that, to be able to see the interworking and the interweaving of everything. Those pieces are also a kind of ambassadors, as well. So I can definitely see the two sides of it. And but I think the level of sensitivity, again, it sets such an important standard for how stories get told about the materials that represent the culture. So yeah, I'm going to be giving pretty much 5 stars for most of these questions. So, just because I've never had this level of care and sensitivity attributed to cultural artifacts that, for me as a Native Hawaiian, are really extensions of me and my ancestors and all of people in Hawaii.
Can you tell me, how does this personal experience that you've had with the Pitt Rivers compare to the policy? What were your initial reactions to reading some of the things in the policy?
Well, it really sets a standard moving forward. Being able to retroactively go through some of the archives and some of the materials, as what you guys are doing, helps to make up for, centuries of misrepresentation. So I think for the most part, both the policies as they were written, as you guys presented them to me, and how it actually played out was completely in sync. So I think that the way that the policies were implemented were completely in line with what actually happened. So glowing reviews.
I'm so glad to hear that, because I'm Canadian and there's a lot of very
negative stories about Western Canadians interacting with sort of Indigenous people who live on Turtle Island as well. So there's not always a great relationship. So it's really good to hear. And we're learning a lot, particularly with Marinka, about the idea of objects having lives. And I would absolutely love to hear more of that perspective from you about objects having sort of their own lived experiences and their own lives within the museum, because I'm not sure that the policy always sort of takes that into account. It's a bit more clinical.
Sure. I think one thing I really want to hone in on is definitely objects being, you know, again, an extension of an actual people, of a culture, an overarching view of why I think this is so important and why I'm really honored to have had the chance to work with you folks. This is what many of our ancient cultures remind us, and our Indigenous cultures, this is what it reminds us of. And I always want to, whenever I talk about Native Indigenous cultures, I also really want to be sure to include, to a degree, absolutely everybody. Everybody is Indigenous to somewhere. And everybody is native to somewhere. By acknowledging the indigeneity in other people, we are working towards respecting our own indigeneity as well. This is how we should all be treated. This is how all of our artifacts should be treated. I understand the distinction between an Indigenous person and then somebody maybe not be Indigenous to that place. But at the same time, I'm trying to find a way to make sure that when we talk about honoring objects that come from humans, that it is something that is collective. What are the lessons that holds, I think, for modern society is that the things that we wore, like if I have a kapa cloak or a kapa skirt in ancient Hawaii, I knew where that came from. If I was 500 years ago and I was wearing this clothes, I saw my grandmother, you know, harvest the valke bushes or the valke plant, and I saw her ferment it, and then I saw her beat it into kapa, and then now I'm wearing it. You know, as an ancient person, I know the genealogy, you know, so to speak, of the things I'm wearing. And because of that, I appreciate this. You know, I understand. And also by watching my grandmother make that cloth, I've learned how to do it, and I'm going to make it, right? In today's society, I don't know where this shirt came from, you know? I don't know if the people who made this shirt, I don't know if they're safe. I don't know if they're living in working conditions where they're, I mean, maybe they are, maybe they're not, but I don't know. We've come from a time when we don't know what the objects around us right now, our modern objects, we don't know who made them. We don't know how they're doing. So I think that to me is almost like the subtext for making sure that the stories are told about all the objects is a reminder for us today to look around us and say, well, you know, we're living in our own museum. And we should know the name to our computers, our headphones, our things. Like who are the people that are making the things around us and how are they and are they well, you know? So I think that's sort of the subtext, which may not always be caught, but I think that's what I want to bring up is that it's important for us to label sort of everything. You know, labeling matters. Labeling everything we own matters too. You know, I think that's something I would extend that idea.
Totally agree with your point about the sort of disconnect that we have in the modern world. But also in the Pitt Rivers collection and in the policy, there's a lot more detail or focus on the collectors and not as much focus on the artists who made the collections. Where were they taken from? What do you think of that? How do you think the museum can rectify that?
Part of, you know, of an exhibit of ancient artifacts from a place is to bring in the modern voices who are descendants of those people and having them talk about what it feels like to have their artifacts in other parts of the world. I think it's important for the museum to present, let's say, Hawaiians who don't want their artifacts to be shown and want them all back. I'm definitely on the other end a little bit more. I mean, I think artifacts, when they need to return, they need to return. But at the same time, in order for our culture to survive, education is such an important part. In other words, it's easier to be erased if people don't even know you exist in the first place, right? And I think it's part of a cultural resurgence is letting the world, showing the world the degree of excellence that goes into our artifacts, that goes into the things that our ancestors made. So I think the museum should potentially give voice to give some labeling or to give some information from people who are opposed to those artifacts being there and why they think artifacts should not be there. So in other words, it's a bit tricky because you almost want to say, here are these artifacts, here are the people that made it, here are the descendants. Some of them agree that this should be here. Some of them don't want this to be here. And this is why they don't want this to be here, to give the opposing view for why these artifacts should be here. And then so the museum would then probably have to say, like, we acknowledge these things, but then this is why we're deciding to keep it here, though. You know, so ultimately try to offer two sides of the coin, why the museum made that final decision. Maybe it's superfluous, you know, maybe it's going too much, but I think that might be helpful. And it might be helpful right across the board for so many other different kinds of, is to give room for the dissenting voices about why they think artifacts should all be returned.
We've been learning a lot again in courses and as well with Marenga about dissenting voices and also about museum administrators being a little bit reticent to sort of have these voices presented, which is not really a tenable position going forward since more people are coming forward and this whole idea of transparency of history. It was always important, but it's becoming more and more well known now where people want to have all viewpoints explored. Whereas, you know, for the Pitt River specifically, thus far, there's been the Western British colonial voice. Whereas now they're representing all of these different communities. They should have their voices there. And it's been really interesting working with Marenga as well to talk about sort of the idea of objects with agency, not just people who made these objects with agency, but how the objects themselves sort of have agency. So do you think that there's a way for the policy to present the idea of an object with agency? Because thus far, you know, the policy is very much focused on the collectors and what the museum does with their collections. But it's not so much focused on, okay, what do these collections do for themselves? And do you think that there's a way that the policy can better reflect that?
I think I'm just going to give you guys a short answer to this one, because I'm just so happy that you guys are already doing what you're doing. It's almost like I feel like if whatever I recommend, I think, you know, just based upon what I've been hearing and what I've been reading and conversations that I've had with Marenga, if I say, hey, you should do this, or you should do that, then I think it seems like you folks would be like, yes, we're getting there. Those things are already on the menu. So anything I have to recommend really already seems like that's the direction that you folks are already taking. And I mean, like I said, and only other thing I was going to mention is what you're already doing, which is to then involve contemporary artists who are still making artifacts, who are still making, you know, objects, is to include their work with their ancestral work. You guys are already doing that. So I would just say more of these art intervention pieces, because, you know, contemporary art coming from a place is such an important way to reconnect that with the ancient art that came from that place as well. So long story short, you folks are already doing, I think, one of the most important thing, which is saying that this culture is not gone. It's not a was culture. It's an is culture, and it's a going to be culture.
Yeah, contemporary artists and modern people's voices, people who are living now and are part of that culture and that heritage, is so, so important. And that's, yeah, part of the work that I think we're trying to do here. So your perspective as a contemporary artist and having some of your work in the Pitt Rivers or collaborating with the Pitt Rivers, in the policy, when the policy refers to collecting pieces, even contemporary artworks, a lot of the focus and prioritization or protection in a way is given to the collectors rather than the artists themselves. What is your opinion on that? How do you think the museum official policy can better protect and respect the artists who make all of the objects in the museum's collections?
I think basically not speaking about the culture as if it were in the past tense. Some way to be able to involve the contemporary artists of the place. Maybe that would be the conversation, is that how much space is allocated for every culture to have a modern representation present with all collections, wherever it makes sense. Let's say you have 150 different cultures represented. You may have 300. you may have 900. I'm not quite sure how many or how you would categorize a different culture, you know, relative in whatever that criteria is. Boy, if you could have something contemporary whenever possible. Obviously, some cultures have turned into other cultures over millennia, and it's hard to say, well, who's an ancient Byzantinian today, you know? And those, I mean, I'm probably, you know, totally distorting that. The new policies really, really put much more emphasis on the story of the place of the contemporary artists that are making the work. So there's so much good things that policies are working towards. I couldn't quite give much more feedback other than what I just keep doing it and maybe try to get as much contemporary representation intermingled with the ancient so that the viewer can kind of see a sense of continuity between the past and the present, as opposed to always thinking about things in the past.
Yeah, it's been, we spoke this morning with Dr. Kara Krumpotich, who's at the U of T, and she was talking sort of a lot about how practice is very easy to change, and because, you know, you just do it. And that's one of the things that the Pitt Rivers has been up to. But the policy that's currently implemented, it is open access, everyone can see it. It's been reviewed sort of every 5 years, but thus far, the only sort of mention of contemporary, their practice is, you know, fantastic with it, or at least it's as good as any museum in the beginnings of decolonization can be. But so far, their policy, which any museum can see or anybody on the internet can see, it only ever mentions contemporary artists very briefly in their sort of collections practice section. But the history of the museum is very much focused on the British colonial administrator, the one who went and collected it. And I think in some sections, they mention about 14 different people who actually collected them, but they don't mention any of the people who actually sort of made it.
And they do refer, I think, to one colonial administrator as a distinguished colonial administrator, which is maybe not the word you want to use in conjunction with colonial.
Right. Sounds to me like so much of that is almost like there's just some tweaks that need to be done in the terminology. I guess to say it's so close. It's so much more improved than it was even, I would guess, 15 years ago or 20 years ago. That's my guess. And the fact that you guys are asking these very questions means that it's only going to improve more.
I'm so thrilled that you're happy with what the Pitt Rivers is doing, because I know we can always do more, but I'm so thrilled that you're happy with it. If we were to rewrite, and of course we will, because it's atrocious, their history section, I can say that on the record, but if they were going to rewrite the history section with sort of a more nuanced understanding, how would you like to see Hawaii represented?
Maybe the thing that I would reflect on, I really haven't come across this level of sensitivity through any kind of museum. I've worked with the Smithsonian. I mean, they're doing some good stuff, but this level of self-awareness as far as the museum goes, the museum understanding its own legacy, you know, an extension of the British Empire, and that whole conversation has shifted so much that I feel really confident that whatever things get changed or whatever things get rewritten, particularly about Hawaii, are going to have a much deeper, you know, representation of indigenous and native voices, you know, and feedback. I feel really confident that whatever you guys do come up with is going to really strongly reflect, just based upon the questions you're already asking. I feel, you know, that whatever Pitt Rivers, whatever they present, is going to be really close to being really strongly representative of things that would be coming from Hawaii.
Very, very glad to hear it. Because like I said, there's a lot of horror stories, especially in North America, with sort of indigenous engagement with museums not going very well or not being properly representative. And so you worked with the Smithsonian, which is super, super cool. I love that. And how did you find that their policies towards sort of representing indigenous cultures as being very present and alive compared to the Pitt Rivers? I mean, might have to do a little tweaking on air with the Smithsonian there, but I would love to know how the two experiences kind of compared and how their policies better reflected that, or how ours could improve as well.
Or practices, if you're not familiar with the policy.
Well, I would definitely speak directly to the actual events that I've done with them. One series that I did in 2010, I believe, and it was at the Museum for the Native American. It was called this Transformer exhibit. What it was I did a whole piece on Hawaiian futurism or Hawaiian science fiction, and they included that as a kind of an interventionist piece, talking about the status of indigenous peoples of the Americas today. They did a whole piece about kind of indigenous futurism, which was really a lot of fun, right? Because it says native peoples are still alive. All these cultures are resurging, and that indigenous knowledge has application for mainstream audiences today. So sort of like the people that have been so oppressed, so to speak, have wisdom to help the people that have been oppressing them. You know what I mean? So I mean, I aspire to see the time when we don't talk about things in terms of oppressor and oppressed, you know, victims and victimizers, because if it, you know, ultimately, hopefully those will fall away once enough time has passed, enough healing has happened, and once enough understanding and conversations have happened between different cultures. I then went on and did a couple other events called Culture Labs. One of them was in Manhattan and another one was in Honolulu. And this was in 2016 and 2017. And the whole thing was to us speaking about Asian Pacific Islander cultures, being on the cutting edge of a lot of different kinds of social sciences and different things like that. Smithsonian puts a lot of work into talking about culture as a living, breathing thing that you can interact with, that you're going to be surprised by, that there are so many more parts to a culture than we get a chance to see. And that often giving the opportunity for cultures themselves to speak through their contemporary audiences, through their contemporary artists. As a Hawaiian, for example, I can now share my culture in all kinds of new ways. Like, again, I'm always very interested in like science fiction and fantasy and all these different things. So now I can talk about my Hawaiian culture in these new genre that allows them to get to people who like science fiction and fantasy, for an example. Or as the work I did with Pitt Rivers was I did a deep dive into Hawaiian mythology. And my take on one part of Hawaiian mythology that wasn't really quite explored, but I'm given the freedom as an indigenous person to say, I'm continuing the work of my ancestors. This is in continuation of what was done 1,000 years ago. I'm continuing to do it today. And, you know, having whole exhibits based upon viewing indigenous culture moving into the future and giving the opportunity for indigenous peoples to share wisdom that has immediate application for contemporary audiences. So the Smithsonian, they put a whole event all around showing how indigenous wisdom has application for contemporary audiences. So the Pitt Rivers could do something similar. I mean, obviously, but not quite on the scale of Smithsonian, but and you folks already are, in a respect that, you know, I'm having the opportunity to share my work and to share with you folks today.
It's so great to hear that your experience with the Pitt Rivers has been so good. And I think that's also why we think it's very important that the policy, the official Pitt Rivers policy, reflects the practices that the Pitt Rivers is implementing now that we're sort of striving for.
Yeah, there's an interesting community sort of partnership that the Pitt Rivers has with the Haida in BC. I'm not entirely sure of the entire logistics of it, but the gist of it is that a group of Haida come to the Pitt Rivers to sort of observe their ancestors' culture. Do you see sort of a program like that being written into the museum's policies? Thus far, there's no real sort of opportunity for engagement written into the policies, especially when, of course, the Pitt Rivers is so far away from Hawaii. So do you see sort of a way that the Pitt Rivers could include that in their policies, a program or a set policy where Indigenous Hawaiians who do want to come to the museum and engage with their artifacts be paid to do so? Or if there are ways that the policy could sort of include that a little bit better, actual like physical engagement?
Absolutely. I think that if there could be, you know, whether it would be something on a smaller scale than what the Smithsonian does, but like an opportunity for kind of like a space or time for Native peoples to gather and to share, kind of like a cultural workshop or a culture lab kind of a thing, where they invite, you know, throughout the year, either guests or they have it as part of a big workshop or a big event where you have Indigenous peoples whose works are at the museum be present, you know, to do cultural engagement in some form. But I think the happy medium is doing Zoom conversations, you know, and having, you know, presentations where if you can't physically fly people there, then, you know, as well, you could just, you know, we could have these sort of conversations with the Pitt River audience, the folks that would visit the, you know, the museum. But I think I would love to come and visit. So I'm being a bit, I mean, like I take every opportunity to go to England. But yeah, I think that there is there's definitely that opportunity. And for some reason, there's something that's coming up in my mind now that I'm just going to mention, that if there's some way for there to be some kind of connection, whether this is an event or whether this is something that is a collaboration. Maybe, yeah, this is what's in my mind right now. Immediately, I'm thinking like what would be wonderful would be for there to be some kind of a collaboration with Indigenous artists. It could be a mural. It could be some kind of a piece or something, or some kind of an art piece that having a conversation about the indigeneity of the peoples of England. You go back 1,000 years, right? You go back 2,000 years in England, right? You have people that were island people, right? It's a big island, but it's an island. It's an island culture, right? So finding some kind of a cool way to remind the British audience, the British public, that when we talk about the land, we talk about the oceans, when we talk about how our gods and our belief systems allowed us to live in relative harmony with each other and our natural ecosystems, right where the Pitt River Museum is. I mean, if you go back 1,000 years, you have examples. You have examples of people who are living, who made their clothes, who know where their clothes come from. You know, so maybe what I would love to see is for the Pitt Rivers to actually look at the idea that indigeneity and indigenous wisdom is right outside the front door. And that it would be wonderful to actually have the focus on having Native people come to and work with folks who consider themselves to be connected with England's indigenous cultures and practices. So something to say that actually to almost get the distinguished collector part of English culture, move that aside and actually say, we want to connect indigeneity to remind that all of these artifacts that we see come from different parts of the world. It would be wonderful to have them connect with ancient England. Ancient Hawaii and ancient England need to meet up. So that would be kind of a fun thing.
Well, I think the Pitt Rivers has always been sort of taking suggestions, but as of right now on this podcast, we're taking suggestions. And I love that, especially since in the policy in particular, there's a big separation between what is sort of considered to be indigenous and what is considered to be modern. So there's not really... It's a fairly big divide that they try and put forward that if something is indigenous, it cannot also be modern. So what I absolutely love about that is it's sort of breaking down the whole idea of modernity entirely and bringing it into just, we all have this sort of connection through our land, through each other. And if we take away all of sort of qualifying factors that the museum tries to impose on us, there's a lot of similarities. And I just love that. I think it's what the museum really should be all about.
And also that indigenous cultures are not dead. They're not in the past. They are also modern.
Absolutely. You know, just trying to simplify it as much as possible on my end. I mean, I know oversimplification, you know, is dangerous because then we lose things. But sometimes it's easier to fit it into our pocket. It's easier to kind of remember, you know, these simple ideas. And to me, I've been meditating on this a lot, is that contemporary cultures, modern cultures, we seem to be able to solve all kinds of problems. Like we can solve technological problems, but there's one major problem that we have been working on for millennia, and Native cultures have found a way to work through this, which is ego, greed, the desire to covet or conquer. There's all these things that are happening. You turn on current events right now, you know, you have, you know, all of these wars that are happening in our world today, and we don't understand what it means to be human now. We understand how to build buildings. We know how to make airplanes. But it seems like the things that live in the buildings and the things that fly in the airplanes, we don't know what they are. So it's almost like modern cultures can solve all of these modern issues. What Native people needed to do, what Hawaiians needed to do, was you can have a great canoe, but if everybody on the canoe is fighting with each other and they don't know how to get along, that canoe isn't going to go anywhere. So I think Native cultures have solutions for the human conundrum. How did ancient cultures, what are ancient laws? What did ancient laws look like? What did ancient societal systems look like? Maybe including that part of the conversation, understanding what it means to be human, is something that we're woefully behind. If compassion is a technology, if you know, we're way behind on that. We're advancing in all these other areas except for what it means to be human. And again, I think that's where the understanding ancient cultures and how they lived, if they lived in harmony, and how they lived in harmony, is an important lesson that we can take. And generally speaking, you know, these beautiful artifacts, you can infer from these artifacts the health of the culture that, the artifacts came from. You know, beautiful art came from times, eras in societies when there was peace, right? Not always, obviously, but, you know, when societies are in relative peace, you know, the artists have time to work, you know, so big, broad ideas, and hopefully some parts of these are useful.
Of course, and I think that pretty well leads into the one final thing that I sort of wanted to ask about is that the policy as it stands, it's very clinical, it's very object-focused and even colonially focused, but it doesn't sort of take into account what you're talking about, sort of the emotional and the human connection and the side of that. So can you tell us a little bit, how do you think the policy can account for that and how important that it is for museums to sort of be places of emotion and spirituality as well?
Well, I would love to see perhaps... maybe there's some opportunity for some virtual reality, the idea of image mapped rooms. So having a room and projected on all four walls would be what it would be like to be in ancient Hawaii, you know, 1,000 years ago. You're on the beach, you look around 360, and you're looking at the land, and you're looking at healthy, rich soils. You're looking at, you know, amazing coconut groves and everything. And then you're looking at the ocean. You see, I look out at the ocean, you see all the canoes that are going out there. And you're saying, like, this is an example of a healthy culture. And this is what it looks like when a people is at health. And then, you know, maybe sitting next to you or just off on the wall is somebody, and they're making an artifact. You know, they're making kapa. And you see that they're smiling and they're having a conversation with somebody. And it's like, you get to be an astral voyager, you know, or you get to be a time traveler, and you get to sit down, and then you hear the noises, and maybe there's a little perfume or something. It smells like some of our native flowers was wafting through the. If that isn't as feasible, or I mean, if that isn't something that is as doable sooner, I love dioramas. You know, having little scenes, and museums do this, right? They'll have like the village, a little diorama, and you can kind of see all the little people and what that would look like. So that may not be as strong as an immersive space. And talking about this idea of what it was like for a native person pre-contact, before anyone arrived, to interrupt a culture. What did the culture look like? And what did it feel like for those native people when their worldview was healthy, right? When they were in their space and when they were in their time. I think something like that would be wonderful. And for that to be sort of a rotating exhibit where there's different cultures are represented at different times of the year, and you get basically a day in the life of what it was like for those indigenous people to be born, to live, and to die in a time when they knew who they were, they knew why they were, they knew how they were, they knew when they were, you know, they knew what they were, you know, they knew why they were. I might have said that already. It kind of puts things back into context that the museum is not the storyteller. Right? It becomes that the museum is like a stage. It becomes a platform for the native people to speak for themselves. It's important to have a platform. It's important to have a stage. It's important for these stories to be shared around the world. And I personally think that, you know, when I think about how information gets shared, I look at our native plants and I look at plants in general. Plants make lots and lots and lots of seeds. And they're not too picky about who's going to share their seeds. If people want to take my seeds, go for it. Because if I share my seeds, I know I'm going to live on. So just based upon that simple principle, I believe cultures need to be shared and perpetuated, but that plant also needs to be taken care of. You know, we have to take care of the plants we have at the same time, prepare for the new plants, giving people an experience of a day in the life of an indigenous person that where the artifacts came from, that put the artifacts back. In other words, you're actually putting them back virtually. Right? You're putting the artifacts back virtually because you're actually taking the person from the museum and you're bringing the person to the place, yeah, as opposed to just bringing the objects to the people. That would be a wonderful next step, I think, is to have immersive experiences that let the culture speak for itself.
I think that's such a great point. That's also something that we talked about in one of our other interviews with John Lin, who's a Haida artist, about this more immersive experience with artifacts with the museum's collections and sort of having that interaction with them so that they're not just behind glass windows, and how that more respects the object's agency and then lets it speak for itself and helps the culture also live and be perpetuated.
Yeah, awesome. And even the idea of a potentially augmented reality, you know, I guess there's all these different ways that you can do it, but you know, by holding up your phone or something and you see actually a native person there in your museum making kapa or making something. So yeah, any way that it's doable, any way that it's possible, it would be wonderful for that to be the next stage in understanding.
Awesome. Well, we want to thank you just so much for coming to talk to us today. I've learned a whole lot and it's been so nice to meet you. And thank you for a lot of very poignant stuff that we can use for this podcast. It's just been so fantastic.
Yes, thank you so much.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Absolutely.
So nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you all. Take care. Aloha.
That was the Pitt Rivers Museum's Matters of Policy podcast, produced by Bessie Woodhouse, Yip Baum, Megan Mann, Alexis Varia, and Bobblehat Sound. Music by Jack Fawcett. Voiceover by Dougal Lott. A special thank you to Marenka Thompson-Odlam and the Knowledge Exchange.